Coming to you live from the Cross Country Mortgage Campus in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland. Here are your hosts, Bo Bishop and Nathan Zagura.
Hey there, and welcome into this special edition of Cleveland Browns Daily. I am merely Bo. Gibby here as well. This is a special edition of Cleveland Browns Daily as we enter into Best of Week here over the next week. You'll be hearing some of the best interviews that we've done here in the offseason, getting you set as we will all start to get set towards training camp starting on July 30th here in Berea. Between now and then and over the next week, you'll be hearing some of those interviews, some of the highlights, some of the things that we think deserve and merit a second run, and some really good interviews here, some insight into how this offseason took place through draft, through free agency, the acquisition of Deshaun Watson. All of those conversations will be had over the course of the next week or so. The idea here is to relive all of this fun, and a lot of it has been. I realize this has been a tough stretch, certainly going through some of these headlines, but this is heading into a fun stretch here as we are inching closer to training camp. And it's funny, Gibby, as we take a look at this thing and today's show, you'll hear our interview with Paul D. Podesta going back from the draft and the off season. That conversation will be in here. This is going to be draft heavy today, so we'll get Matt Miller on this program as well, breaking down our draft. Dane Brugler on the draft as well. Sam Monson will be an interview we did with Sam Monson will be in this program as well today. So this one will be on. Most of the time in the heavy lifting in the show today that you'll hear will be on the draft and on player acquisitions from this offseason.
It should be really good. You know, you're going to hear some complete breakdowns of our draft class, of what we've done in free agency, what guys have liked, and really the things that a lot of these expert analysts are telling you make this football team a championship caliber football team.
Yeah, all of the pieces, everything that's been done here. You know, you think about this group with Paul and AB and Stefanski that have been together now going into the third season, the third offseason together. This full plan is now coming into picture, and what you have is one of the more talented rosters in all of the National Football League. And so you're going to get a look at that. Speaking of Paul, he's at the forefront of this. That conversation is coming up next. You're listening to a special edition of Cleveland Browns Daily right here on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Welcome back into this special edition of Cleveland Browns Daily. And the Bath Authority could give you that bathroom of your dreams. Why not transform that current bathroom you have into a custom bath for a spa-like experience? Let the Bath Authority make it a reality for you at a fraction of the cost of the competitors. The Bath Authority is our area's premier bath and shower remodeler, expert, factory-trained installers. Give them a call now for $500 off your next custom bath or shower remodel. That number is 216-220-8399 or go to thebathauthority.com. It's where affordability meets quality. The largest selection of bath projects are all made in the United States. You can change your bathroom from outdated to outstanding with a call to the Bath Authority. Acrylic tubs that insulate, keep the heat in, tub to shower conversions as well. Superior products, expert installers at the Bath Authority at 216-220-8399 and $500 off your next custom bath or shower remodel. And now here's our conversation with Browns Chief Strategy Officer Paul D. Podesta. This was after the NFL draft from early May. Let's have a listen. Paul, thank you so much for taking the time. Let me just start big picture because, Paul, we have this – I think a lot of fans have this view that they think the draft is this chaotic experience and people are flying in and phones are ringing and you're handing people notes. For someone like you who's been through a lot of these and now looking back on this most recent one, how close is that perception to your guys' reality?
That's a great question. I would say at times – there might be some of that going on, but there's also there's a lot of waiting. You know, I mean, it's seven rounds in 3 days. In the first round, there's a lot of time in between picks that gradually decreases as the draft goes on, but there's still an ample amount of time. And what I think fans probably don't realize is that a lot of the groundwork for the trades is done long before you're on the clock. You know, so for instance, this year when we had the number 44 pick and we ended up trading back, we were on the phone with a handful of different teams, you know, hours before the draft even began that night. So we were the 12th pick, you know, at the start of the second day. And we had a very good idea of, hey, if we wanted to move back, These were our opportunities to do so. So when we actually got on the clock, you know, it was very clear what we were able to do. So we had time to sort of talk through all those different possibilities and prepare in case of any eventuality. So while there are some times where it's a bit frantic, you know, for instance, last year when JOK was available in the second round, which was a little unexpected, you're scrambling a little bit more. But we do enough preparation leading up to it, both in the day of, but also even in the weeks leading up to it, that it's actually probably much more calm than people would imagine.
So when you went into day two, when that part of the draft started, did you already know that, hey, if one of our guys, and I'm not sure how many were even left on the board at that point, but if one of our guys aren't there at 44, did you already know the Houston thing was there? And then does the process be like, okay, now we're calling them, hey, do you still want to do this?
I think that last point is essential, is do you still want to do this? So, yes, we have a very good sense at that point of where our opportunities are. You know, can we move down to 50? Can we move down to 56? You know, who are the teams that are interested in moving up to 44? Now, all of that interest is usually conditional on the guy they want still being there, right? So while we're talking to these teams, like I said, an hour or two before the draft begins, so we have a sense of who's interested in moving up, that interest could disappear quickly, right? So we had three or four teams that we had talked to about potentially moving up to 44 if our guy wasn't there, you know, and as it turns out, you know, a couple of those teams, their interest subsided because the guy they wanted wasn't there anymore either. So it is fluid, you know, as far as that goes. But yes, when we were on the clock, we had already had conversations with Houston. We called to verify they were still interested, and then ultimately made the decision to trade back.
Paul, we obviously know how process-driven you guys are, and we talked to AB about it and Kevin about it, and we talked to you about it a couple times a year, and just thrilled about the way you guys go about your business and a very, very level, even keel approach to it. But at times, do you find yourself, because part of the draft is you fall in love with a prospect, and do you have to fall in and out of love with prospects all the time as this is going? And how do you manage that and keep it about the process? Because there has to be some emotional tie to a player when you spend all of this time looking into these guys.
Oh, there's no question. There is, you know. And the good news is there are a lot of players to like, you know, and for different reasons. Yep. So, you know, when we go in, you know, in that particular circumstance, we're not going in with pick 144 thinking about one player. We're really thinking about a group of what I would call target players that we think maybe have a chance to get to 44. Some of them likely not, you know, but hopefully someone in the group, you know, will get there. But, you know, we'll sort of look at that entire target group and feel really good about any of them. Now, if we take player A, that may send us in one direction for the next round or even in future rounds. If we take player B, it might send us in a totally different direction, you know, et cetera. But one of the things we do, even to try to prepare ourselves emotionally, is that we hold mock drafts in the weeks leading up to the real draft, where we have all of our scouts and coaches basically play GM for the other 31 teams. And we run through the draft, and we do it a whole bunch of times. And so we end up being presented with, you know, what you'd consider to be wipeout scenarios, right, where all the players you like are gone, or other scenarios where two of your players are still there and you have to decide between those two. And but what we try to create in those situations is, you know, trade-offs that we're going to have to make. And some of those, to your point, are emotional, right?
Yeah.
And but we've done that. You know, we've done that a week or 10 days before the draft. We've done it a number of times. So by the time the actual draft comes along, you know, we're prepared, and we're prepared to do it in maybe a slightly less emotional way.
Paul, would it be possible for myself, Bo, and Gibbe to have a franchise next year in these mock drafts, the CBD team, just to see how we do there?
Yeah, you'd have to talk to Chris Cooper about that. He's the guru there. He sets it all up.
Cooper.
Although
okay.
I will tell
right,
you,
Cooper.
you're subject to criticism from the GM, because at some point he may look up on the board and say, "Who's drafting for Arizona?"
Bring it on,
so or he might be careful.
Or the other.
Conversely, you could be saying,
or
Team CBD Cardinals are killing it. Let's go.
Right. Exactly.
So
right.
When you come out of these things, you mentioned you don't necessarily look at one guy at a spot. It did feel, though, talking to you, talking to Coach, hearing from AB, that at 78, Alex Wright was kind of that guy. It was like, if we can get Alex Wright to 78, we're thrilled about it. Is that one of the more consensus picks you've been a part of from, let's call it, third round on? I think first and second round, maybe it's a little easier for that. But it really felt like that was just a kind of a unanimous guy that you guys were into.
It was. It was. And as you indicate, you know, sometimes that's harder as the draft goes on because, you know, it's easier to love a player in the first round where they have very few faults, right? And everyone says, geez, I'd love to have this player. If a player is available in the third round, fourth round, there's at least some question about him as to why he didn't go in the first round, right? So it's a little bit harder to get consensus. That said, you know, so he certainly was that. We've been fortunate, I think, in the last 3 years. We've had a number of picks, you know, beyond the third round that I would consider to be consensus picks. In fact, I would say almost the majority of our picks from the third round on in each of the 3 years or each of the past 3 years have been, you know, consensus type picks. That doesn't mean that every single one of the, you know, 60 people in our football operation between coaches, scouts, analysts, et cetera, all agree, you know, on
right.
a single player, but an overwhelming majority are really in favor of bringing this particular player on board. But to Alex Wright's case in particular, he was a guy that we had targeted somewhere in the third round that just felt like, hey, this is a really good fit for what we want to do on defense and how we want to play. And so we were, you know, we felt even going into Thursday, going into round one, we thought, you know, we're probably going to come out of this weekend with Alex Wright as a Cleveland Brown. You know, we just got to figure out how we do it.
You guys figured it out very well. By the way, I don't think this should go unnoticed, guys.
Sure.
And I know Bo will certainly appreciate that. But, Paul, thank you so much for knowing that we're Scottsdale people and giving us
That's
the Arizona
right.
Cardinals. That meant
very
a lot
kind.
To me. That
very
meant a
kind.
Lot to me.
Yeah. That was very, very kind of you, Paul. We, especially today, as it's quite gray and quite rainy here, sir.
He might not be aware.
He might not be
Good
aware. It's Yeah, you're winning.
Yes,
Speaking of winning, I got to tell you, Paul, I really like David Bell. Watch a lot of Big Ten football with the Ohio State stuff that I do. And one thing I note about that guy is when the stage is big and the lights are bright, he shows out against the best defenses they played last year. He was great. I thought Iowa probably the best defense of the Big Ten. I think he had 240 yards against Iowa receiving, caught everything comes his way. I was excited about it. Then I come to find out Coach Stefanski maybe was even more excited than I was. What can you tell us about the Bell process and getting him in the fold?
Yeah, I think you hit on it, right? Super productive, played against really, really good competition, excelled when the competition was at its best. He's a clean route runner. He has great hands. We think among the best hands in the entire draft class this year. And then tough with the ball in his hands. You know, once he gets it, he's tough to bring down. So we just sort of like everything about him. You know, he fits our smart, tough, accountable, you know, mold of all the players we're looking for. And he joins an already, I think, highly, highly intelligent wide receiver room. You know, all these guys have picked up the offense very quickly, can move around into the different spots. And we think he can do that too. He's got some inside outside flex. I think we'll certainly see some time in the slot, you know, as well as playing outside. So we just sort of liked everything about him, all business attitude, you know, you know, as you said, you know, Coach Stefanski's a big fan. About, I don't know, 4 or 6 weeks ago, he came in the office, sat down on my couch, and just unprompted said, "You know who I like in this draft? David Bell." I said, okay. And at that point, I thought, all right, David Bell's got a pretty good chance of being with us, you know, if that's the case. But sort of all throughout, you know, Kevin was a big proponent of his and was certainly excited when we were able to add him.
That's right. When he said, "Thanks for believing me, Coach." Oh, I believe in you. That, as I said many times, that's as big an endorsement as you're going to get from Kevin Stefanski. Talk with Browns Chief Strategy Officer Paul DePodesta. All right, Depot, you get into the numbers. And before I ask a question about the player in particular, I want to talk about the position because last year, obviously, we know, look, the Browns had the lowest field goal percentage in the National Football League. That was something you wanted to address. You have done that with the selection of Cade York. But big picture, as you guys run through these things, in today's NFL, what is a Justin Tucker, an Evan McPherson, a Carlson? What are those guys worth in terms of wins and losses in an NFL season? Are they worth a game or a game plus?
Well, it really depends on the situation. I mean, you could talk about, you know, in theory, what they're worth, but ultimately what matters is, you know, at the end of the day, do they win you a game? You know, you don't win very many games in the NFL by kicking a lot of field goals, right?
Correct.
I mean, if you're on the road, you know, you have four different scoring drives, you score one touchdown, three field goals, you know, you're probably not going to win that game, right? So that's not the goal here. You certainly want to make them when you have the opportunity. That's a big one, because missing field goals is actually pretty painful. It's essentially a turnover, you know, where the team's not only getting the ball where you had it, they're getting it, you know, plus 7 yards or plus 8 yards at that point. So the misses can really hurt. But it's the big makes, you know, it's the makes in the final minute of a half. It's the makes to win a game. We saw that a lot, obviously, in the playoffs this year, but, you know, throughout the history of football. So, you know, in that sense, it's important. You will find a moment in your season where it becomes very important to have that guy. You know, it may not be every week. It may not even be, you know, 15 out of the 17 regular season games. But when it matters an awful lot. And, you know, we have been on the search for, you know, finding some stability of the position. We think the guys that have done it the last couple of jobs have done an admirable job. The conditions aren't always the easiest, you know, in our place to kick, and we understand that. But we think we've, you know, now got a guy that hopefully can solidify this position for a few years. And we know there are going to be some growing pains, as there are with any rookie at any position. But we think he's got, you know, a really nice ceiling. We're excited to have him.
Yeah, and you make that pick in the fourth round. It's the earliest a kicker has been drafted since 2016, and it was one of the picks acquired in the trade back from number 44. Does that make it feel a little easier? Like, all right, we got this free pick. Let's go ahead and use that on a kicker here. And I realize you obviously thought he wouldn't be available to you if you waited until pick number 156. So that's why you pulled the trigger there. But what was it about Cade that you liked it, and just the thought process saying now's the time to get that kicker, given the importance you just laid out?
Yeah, I think you actually hit on it. I mean, in an ideal world, can you use that pick for something else and you take the kicker a little later? Sure. There was no assurance for us that he'd be available at 156. And I think if you look at the sort of cost-benefit piece of that, say, how would we feel if he gets taken versus how do we feel if we take him and people say, geez, that seems a little early. But he goes on to be a great player. I mean, if he goes on and has a terrific NFL career, I don't think anyone's going to care where he was drafted.
Right.
So in that sense, it just made sense for us to go ahead and secure him there rather than run the risk of losing him. Because we really did think he is a really high quality prospect at the position. I think he set the record for 50 plus yard field goals, you know, in college. He made 15 out of 19, which is pretty extraordinary. First of all, it's pretty extraordinary that someone would attempt 19, 50 plus yard
college.
Goals in college. Let alone make 15 of them. Big leg. We think he can, even though he didn't kick off in college because of an incumbent there, we think he can be a really good kickoff guy for us too. We think ultimately it's an important addition. And, you know, even if it's maybe it's that one game, you know, even sometime in the next 2, 3, 4 years that really makes the difference, I think we'll be thrilled if we have him.
Yeah, certainly could. I mean, the 57-yarder in the fog in the swamp is one that you certainly remember, and anybody who watched college football remembers that one very, very well. Paul, now what for you guys, right? Do you get a minute to breathe here? We know there's still a lot of big names in free agency. There's still some guys that you probably want to have conversation with there. What's the next couple of weeks like for you guys? And we're kind of in a little bit of a lull right now. Do you sense that there will be some action starting to pick up in terms of the remaining free agents that are still out there as these rosters start to take shape?
Yeah, you know, this is actually still a busy time for us. We don't really get to take much of a breather after the draft. As you noted, there's still some free agents out there. You know, our roster building's really never done, but certainly not done at this point. You know, we still want to fill some holes before we get to training camp, and ideally while we're here still in the spring season. So that's sort of the next thing that's on our plate right now is OTAs, right? OTAs have just started. So we've got players there in the building, and they'll be ramping up as the weeks, you know, go on. Rookie development starts in about 10 days. You know, I think next weekend we have all the rookies in there for their mini camp, and then they get to start joining the big guys and the veteran guys in OTAs. And on top of that, this is probably the less sexy part of it all, is that from a front office and scouting perspective, this is actually when everybody's contracts run out. They usually run out at the end of May. So administratively, there's a lot of work to do to try to get people extensions, keep people on, and try to keep your front office team together. And again, that generally doesn't make headlines, but that can have a huge impact on the organization. So, we'll continue to be, very busy here for the next 4 or 6 weeks, and maybe finally get to take a little bit of a breather once we get through veteran minicamp in mid-June.
Yeah, Paul, and you mentioned in the presser right after the draft, you know, the loaded running back room, first world problems. Great to have these competitions where these guys who are drafted late try to make the roster. But there still do feel like there might be some needs, whether it be that edge opposite, you know, Myles Garrett, whether that be, you know, a nickel corner with the trading of Troy Hill, or certainly adding somebody else to that receiver room. If you are going into the veteran free agent market, is the desire, not to say that it's got everything works out the way you want, but is the desire to have these guys here for the man in time for the mandatory mini camp so that they can get started there? Would you like to have, you know, the roster as fleshed out as possible by then?
I think that's probably true both for the team and for the players. I think okay. Players at this point are anxious, especially if it's going to be a new situation for them. They want to be in some of the OTAs. They certainly want to be in veteran mini camp. They want to start to learn the language, become friendly with their teammates, et cetera. So look, it's not the end all be all. During the COVID year, we didn't even have any spring practice.
Correct.
And everyone still managed. So I think it's more of a nice to have rather than a need to have. But yeah, I think, in a perfect world, everyone would rather, get together, or make some of these deals, sooner rather than later. And for us, though, I'll say this, and we're, the quest for the perfect roster will always continue, right? It sort of doesn't, even if we add some guys now or we don't, it doesn't stop now. It doesn't stop in training camp, won't stop, during the course of the season. So it's something that we're always, we're always on top of, every day, even during the course of the regular season.
Coming up next on this special edition of Cleveland Browns Daily, our conversation with Matt Miller, ESPN draft analyst. He'll have a look at what our draft meant, the hits, and if there were any misses. You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
If a car, truck, or motorcycle accident caused you injury, call the injury lawyers at 1-800-ELK-OHIO for a free case review. Elk & Elk is a proud partner of your Cleveland Browns. And now here's our conversation with Matt Miller, ESPN NFL draft analyst from May 9th.
The Browns did not have a first-round pick. They traded out of the second round, but we know this draft really includes Deshaun Watson, Amari Cooper, some of the assets were given up to acquire those guys. But as you look at this team, look at the roster, what do you think overall of the job that Andrew Berry and company did here in the 2022 NFL draft?
Yeah, I think it's very impressive. And I think, Paul, of course my dog's going to bark as soon as I start talking. I think it's really impressive.
Like this would be the time to have that happen.
That's right, yeah.
right. Doing Browns radio, right? Although he's like a 20-pound French bulldog. It's not even an intimidating dog. Anyway, so the Browns roster, I think, again, add in Amari Cooper, add in, obviously, Deshaun Watson. What's crazy, guys, last summer I remember writing that the Browns roster had very few actual holes. And I remember a year ago, coming off a playoff berth, it looked like Baker was the long-term answer. It was really a roster that there weren't a lot of question marks. And I think that is even more true now, albeit with a true franchise quarterback, a guy who the last time we saw him was one of the three or four best quarterbacks in football. And that was with the situation in Houston where he didn't have the supporting cast that he has in Cleveland. You didn't have an Amari Cooper. We didn't have the offensive line that Cleveland has. So, yep. And definitely not the run game. So I think you have to be excited about that. So when you factor that in and you go into the draft, you don't pick until the third round, But I feel like they walked away with guys who can contribute right away at positions of need. You know, Martin Emerson could potentially work into that mix opposite Denzel Ward, you know, where we haven't quite seen guys like Greedy Williams take that step that we thought they might coming out of college. I wouldn't be surprised if Martin Emerson ends up that other starting corner. I think you could say the same thing for Alex Wright opposite Miles Garrett. Is Chase Winovich going to take that role? Is there a chance for a guy like Clowney to come back on a veteran deal? I wouldn't be surprised if we see both Alex Wright and Perrin Winfrey push their way into at least a heavy use in a rotation.
Well, let me ask you this. When they did finally pick and they got out of the second round, when they did pick, were you surprised that their first pick would have been a defensive back?
I wasn't. Maybe some folks were. I thought it would either be defensive end or defensive back. That was kind of the intel that was out there. So looking at kind of the way the board had fallen, I truly believed at that time Martin Emerson, other than N'Kobe Dean, he was my best player available at that time. So the way my board kind of stacked up, it was like, okay, this is a good pick for them. I think it's also a very good pick for the scheme, you know, to have somebody who's 6'2", 200 pounds, has great length. No, he didn't have on-ball production in college. He just had one pick. But you could see, you know, pass breakups, passes defense, that was all there. And so opposite Denzel Ward, who's fantastic but not the biggest guy, I think you want someone like this who's a little more physically gifted.
So you liked Emerson a lot coming out of Mississippi State. You mentioned Alex Wright as well out of Alabama, Birmingham, big defensive end. What did you like about him? And he's somebody that the Browns were thrilled to get.
Yeah, man, I think the first thing you notice is length. Like, I remember the first time seeing him in person was just like, my goodness, you know, and he looks bigger than 270, you know, so it was like, okay, is this a guy who could potentially bump inside on pass downs? Is someone who, you know, is only going to play outside? But I think he has the athleticism to flash off the edge even, you know, and that length definitely shows up on tape when you start to evaluate him. It's like, hey, he uses that length very well to keep blockers off his frame. You know, obviously he's not been super tested coming out of UAB, but where you have now, you kind of have the smaller, speedier guy in Winovich. This is a contrast to that. You got the longer, more powerful guy who does have some speed, you know, to bend and you know, cross space of offensive tackles. It's just, I think for Alex, it's just about probably getting a little bit stronger in terms of his play strength, and then also just, you know, learning how to put all those tools together to become a more complete pass rusher.
So Matt, this was a draft going in that had incredible talent at wide receiver, and it went off the board in a flurry in the first round, and then some more in the second round, and the Browns end up with David Bell in the third round. What did you think of him, and what do you think he'll be as a Brown?
Yeah, I think he's a starter as a slot receiver, in my opinion. He was a tough player to evaluate because you watch the tape over the course of his career, and you could get pretty excited about it. You know, what he does as a route runner, the way he attacks the ball. But then obviously, you know, you get a 4.65 in the 40 at a combine that was historically fast. That worries you a little bit. You know, it's like, okay, is the separation going to be there? Is he going to be able to run himself open like he did at Purdue? But I think he's, you know, a fantastic catcher, you know, of the football, just in terms of breaking routes, slant routes. He's going to be good at that, you know, of almost an old school possession receiver. I think the biggest question will just be, can he get himself open, you know, because he has the body control. He definitely has the, you know, post-catch ability that we saw on tape. The only reason he's available, you know, where he's at is because of the poor 40 time. But I would not be surprised if he learns the playbook quickly, if we see him work in there with Amari Cooper, with Donovan Peoples-Jones, to become, you know, one of the primary targets.
Yeah, I think that's the hope. Clearly, Kevin Stefanski is very excited about him. That's what they did in the third round. You go into the fourth round, and two picks that I think a lot of people I know internally are excited about. It felt like got pretty good reviews. Perrin Winfrey, the defensive tackle out of Oklahoma, who's quite a character and has some serious athletic juice, and then Cade York, the kicker out of LSU. What did you think about the way that the Browns went there in the fourth round?
You know, people will make fun of drafting a kicker, but it's a surefire starter. You know, like you're getting a starter in the middle of the fourth round is how I look at it. And especially, I tweeted this during the draft, that a team I spoke to, they had a higher grade on Cade York than they did on Evan McPherson out of Florida last year, who's now the Bengals. So the respect for Cade York. I don't spend a lot of time scouting kickers, I'm not going to lie. I have some people I talk to who know what they're looking at and say, hey, what do you think of this? And folks thought he's, you know, really, really good. So I liked that pick. Perrin Winfrey, I think the key is, like, you have to almost teach him to control his aggression a little bit, which is you'd rather have that.
Yeah.
I think you'd rather have a guy that you have to tell to slow down than have a guy that you have to tell to speed up. So I like that from him. You know, he's disruptive in the Big 12. You know, his pass rush win rate was fantastic. The athleticism's there. I think he's a player who definitely could be a better pro than he was collegiate, even, because the tools are all there. I think it's just getting someone to rein him in a little bit.
You know, isn't it amazing, Matt? We go through all of these picks, okay, and the Browns ended up with 9 guys coming in. And you just touched on it, and we've talked about it before here on the show. The kicker will be the most immediate impact. I mean, it's opening day, and you're in a tight game, and you're going to be looking at Cade York going out there to try and win a game. Now, he either does it or he becomes public enemy number one pretty quickly, you know,
for sure,
in Cleveland or in any other town. But it is amazing how this kid will become an immediate important part of the puzzle for the Browns
factor
every Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, and the weird thing, or not weird thing, the good thing about Cade York is he's also punted. He's been the kickoff guy at LSU, and I believe he holds the record for 50-yard field goals at LSU.
Yep, 15.
Like, 50, yeah, that's right, 15, that's a lot. That's
yeah.
So also, like, obviously going from Baton Rouge to Cleveland, a little bit different environment, different elements that you're going to have to deal with. But I would be encouraged by someone who has the strength, the accuracy, and, you know, the versatility even of, like, hey, if we need this guy to punt and a pinch, he can do it and do it at a high level.
Matt, I was reading the one that you did with Jordan Reed where he kind of went through your favorite picks of all the different rounds, and I know that Isaiah Thomas, who the Browns got in the 7th, Perrion Winfrey's teammate out of Oklahoma on that line, was one that you liked. What are we getting in him other than obviously a tremendous name named after the great Detroit Piston? What are we getting in him as a player? And he's somebody that you think, because it's different here now. These 5th, 6th, 7th rounders are not locks to make a football team with the Cleveland
right.
Browns anymore like they used to be, but Thomas seems to be a guy who stands out to you. What does he bring to the table?
Yeah, I think athleticism at the pass rusher spot. You know, kind of like we talked about with Alex Wright, as a player who maybe would have been called a tweener in the past. I think Isaiah Thomas is more of your pure speed rusher. You know, he's got all the bursts that you need to beat people off the snap. He uses his hands well. And also, I'm a Texas fan, so I had to watch this guy just kill us. He's so good at getting his hands up and either taking away passing windows or batting the ball down. Like, he shows that kind of, you know, football IQ of, okay, I can't get to the quarterback, but I'm going to make his life hell at the line of scrimmage anyway. You know, so that's one of my favorite things. I could not believe he was available in the 7th round. I thought for sure he would be, you know, a 5th round pick at worst. So it's
wow.
just, it's fantastic value. You know, I think he's going to have to get a little bit better against the run, but, like, okay, I'll take that in the 7th round. Let's just let him
yeah.
put his ears back and be, you know, a depth piece at defensive end.
Matt, what about the running back the Browns got out of Cincinnati? The kid Ford comes in here. He had played at Alabama. He went to Alabama. Then he ended up at Cincinnati. Boy, Cincinnati had a lot of kids drafted.
They were
legit in this draft. There's no doubt about it. This guy comes to a team that's got Nick Chubb. They've got Kareem Hunt. They've got D'Ernest Johnson. What can we look for from him?
Yeah, I was surprised that they used a draft pick on a running back, actually. That was really the only move they made where I was like, okay, well, is there more to the story here that we
right.
don't know?
What's
but
next?
I think with Jerome Ford, he's a great receiver out of the backfield. So he does bring a skill set that's a little different. I think, you know, Nick and Kareem, if you just ask them to line up and run, you're not going to be like, oh, my gosh, they're super fast. Now, they do run away from people, but their time speed, especially Kareem Hunt, time speed maybe not as impressive. So I think with Jerome Ford, you're getting more of like a slasher who can also be a really good receiver out of the backfield. So that's what I'm seeing. And also, you know, a guy who's going to be faster than the 4.5s that were, you know, run by Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. So I think it is more of a diversity in the backfield. He is different. You know, if they had drafted someone that was more similar to Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb, I think you'd probably scratch your head even more. But, man, he's good as a receiver. I know there were teams that even thought if he worked at it, he could probably be a slot receiver if he wanted to be. So I would say he's your, you know, third down option that can spell the other running backs and be that receiver out of the backfield.
Matt, we appreciate time talk with Matt Miller, ESPN NFL draft analyst. We'll leave you with this one. What was your favorite pick that was made by Andrew Berry in this draft?
Honestly, I think it was probably Perrion Winfrey, just because he has the potential to be a very impactful three technique. And especially, like, we're talking about, like you guys mentioned, a team that didn't pick until the, you know, early hundreds. The early
round.
60s, late 60s. Yep. Yeah. So to get, I think, players that, no rookie starters other than Cade York, but guys who have developmental traits, and Perry Winfrey does. He does have that three technique quickness. As I said, it's just about getting him dialed down a little bit, which I'll take any day of the week.
Coming up next in this special edition of Cleveland Browns Daily, our conversation with Seth Walder of ESPN, his power rankings we put under the microscope. You're listening to the Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Welcome back into this special edition of Cleveland Browns Daily. And now our conversation with Seth Walder of ESPN, his power rankings under our microscope. Seth, let's go through this. Let's start here. Before we get into where we are in all of it, give the folks out there what this, how you come up with it, what goes into it, the process behind it.
Yeah, sure. And this has changed. We have a new process this year, so happy to talk about that. Football Power Index, the idea is to predictively rank team strength for all 32 teams in the NFL and then use that to form the basis of projections where we simulate out the season, you know, 10,000 times and determine the probabilities of each team, you know, winning their division, winning the Super Bowl, average number of wins. In the preseason, the way this works is we use a variety of factors to determine how good each team is. So we look at past performance by that team. We look at the individual players that are on that team. We use several different rating systems there to assess the quality of their non-quarterbacks. We have a specific quarterback predictive model. So we're looking at their past expected points added per play, and we're using that to determine how good we think that they are altogether. And then there's a little bit of a coach factor. If you're maintaining your coach or you know, going through a coaching change, that can affect things too. So put that all together, and that is what gives us these strength ratings. And then as we go through the season, it updates. Every week is, you know, new piece of information. How did you play? Did you beat expectations? Who did you play against? And how efficient were you? And that's how the ratings and projections move throughout the year.
All right, Seth, let's start with the Browns. What do you see for the Browns here in 2022?
So we have the Browns as the 10th best team, and I want to talk about their rating because it's obviously a unique situation. I think we have no one knows exactly what we're talking about, a quarterback, and that drives so much of how good we think a team is. So
of
let me tell you how the model sees it, and then you know we can adjust how we think. It gives the Browns a full season of Deshaun Watson, and it puts them at 10th in doing so. However, I will say this. One of the things that goes into our predictive quarterback model, it looks at is if you didn't play last season, it assumes that something has gone very poorly for you. Either you have been hurt all year or you were not good enough to get on the field. Now, Deshaun Watson is in a kind of different category, right? And
sure,
he still has, you know, 22 civil lawsuits, you know, of women accusing him of inappropriate sexual conduct during massages. And that might affect his suspension. And so we're assuming a sort of like depressed level of Deshaun Watson's skill, but for a full season. I'm not gonna say 17 games because anyone can get hurt. So what's the truth? It's hard to know. Maybe a better Watson, but fewer games played might get you to roughly the same conclusion. But that is how we come to that number. That's sort of the way the model is handling that situation.
When you take, so you have the Browns as the 10th best team. When you go and look at now the model, you play it out, where do the Browns finish in terms of record and how does that rank amongst the league?
So they're obviously in a very competitive division. We put them at 9.6 wins on average, the sort of mean outcome, and we give them the best chance to win the division, 35%.
Okay.
So they're a very narrow favorite. It makes them. I mean, look, I think Cleveland. You look at the rest of the roster, and there's obviously a lot of pieces to like. I mean, I think you know that offensive line will support who's ever is that quarterback. You have some stars on. on defense. So it's easy to see, I think, why Cleveland got strength. It's just so much depends on the quarterback. But, yes, 35% chance to win the division, a very narrow favorite over Baltimore and Cincinnati with Pittsburgh way back there. And then we're looking at a 57% chance to make the playoffs overall.
When you went through this, and I don't know if you're able to isolate, but we've talked about looking, obviously, with the Broncos, it's Russell Wilson is the factor. Davante Adams goes from the Packers to the Raiders. Tyreek Hill goes to the Dolphins. Deshaun Watson obviously comes to the Browns. Who was the biggest needle mover, maybe in a positive way? And then from a non-quarterback perspective, who was the biggest needle mover, maybe in a negative way, that hurt its former team the most?
Ooh, that's a great question. So I think in the biggest needle mover in a positive way, like, it has to be Russell Wilson. We're talking about just a huge upgrade from Drew Locke to Wilson. I can't see how that's not. I'm gonna vamp while I try and guess here. I don't know like a specific perfect way to do this, but I think the answer is going to be Adams. That you know, if we're talking about non-quarterback movement.
Sure.
Because the other fact is, like, it's you said, also, like, hurting their team, right? And so the Packers, I mean, when with like what's left there in Green Bay at wide receiver, and wide receiver probably being the most likely most important non-quarterback position, I mean, to leave a group with Randall Cobb and Alan Lazard and Christian Watson down from Davante Adams at wide receiver one, like, that's just a huge drop-off. And there's a lot to like about Green Bay. I think, you know, we're still at two there, and I think part of that's because you're getting they were really good last year without Bakhtiari and without Jair Alexander, without Elgton Jenkins for a long time, and they're getting those guys back. So there's reason to be optimistic about Green Bay, but I think that was – I mean, there's no question that was really costly to their offense.
Coming up next is special edition of Cleveland Browns Daily. Dane Brugler from The Athletic. Join the BPA crew to break down our draft class. That's coming up next, which is a win for everybody. You listen to Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Welcome back into this special edition of Cleveland Browns Daily. Bo here for my friends at Renew Home Exteriors, where beautifying and protecting your home is their passion. Upgrade the look of your home. Create a high return on investment with new siding from Renew Home Exteriors, ranging in every architectural style and over 50 colors to choose from. You get $1,500 off and free insulation wrap plus 0% interest for qualified buyers. In addition, Renew Home Exteriors will meet or beat the competitors. Estimates up to 10% or pay you $100. Beautify your home with premium siding and roofing products at lower prices with Renew Home Exteriors. Visit renewestimate.com for more information. And now a conversation with Dane Brugler from the BPA crew, breaking down our 2022 Browns draft class.
The great Dane Brugler joins us, and congratulations again, my friend, on a successful year. It was a crazy draft, one I think that none of us saw coming from Vegas, and rightfully so that it was in Vegas to be that crazy.
Yeah, it was definitely crazy and eventful. And, you know, there's so many question marks going into the draft. And, you know, it's fun to see it all play out. And that's the best part of, to me, the draft is when it's over, we don't have to talk about how guys would fit or, you know, these educated guesses. We could just talk about the fits. And, okay, this is who the Browns drafted. This is how they fit. This is the thought process. And because really, because we try to NFL games always evolving, right? And so the best way to stay on top of that is to follow the money and follow the draft picks. How are teams spending their money in free agency in terms of you know, the best fits on their team, the highest paid positions, that type of thing? And then where do they allocate the resources on draft weekend, the draft capital? So there's a lot to learn from this weekend, not just now, but as we go forward.
Concerning the Browns, I imagine that it didn't surprise you that the Browns traded back out of the second round. I think a lot of people had that vibe, but how much did it surprise you that the first pick was a cornerback?
Yeah, definitely a surprise. And I mean, you're absolutely right. I think that Andrew Berry, not interested in picking where he's supposed to in the second round. Just it's not for him. And, you know, hey, that's great. With the extra draft capital they were able to pick up. And, you know, I think it it very much aligned with what we thought the Browns would do. But in terms of the movement, but drafting a corner, that was a little surprising. And then obviously the Troy Hill transaction that maybe brought some more, thought or understanding to the thought process there. And Martin Emerson, you know, he's a player that I had ranked as a more of a, fourth, fifth round pick. So they took him in the third round, and we'll see how that plays out. And, he's a good player. I mean, you love the size. And I think when you look at this division and you think about, all right, got to go up against Chase Claypool. You got to go up against Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, some of these receivers that we have in the division. All right, well, you can never have too much depth at cornerback. And it'll be interesting now to see, okay, is Gregory Newsom going to move inside? Or how the inside-outside alignments now will be interesting how they work with these corners. But, it's never a bad idea to go with a premium position with your first pick in the draft, whether that's on the offensive line, whether that's a pass rusher, a wide receiver, or a cornerback. So can understand the thought process from that perspective.
Talking with Dane Brugler from The Athletic, breaking down the Browns' 2022 draft class. Martin Emerson, obviously, in the third round. We had three picks in the third round. At pick 78, the Browns taking a guy I know that you were high on in your draft guide, the Beast, and who we've talked about a few times, Alex Wright, the edge rusher from UAB. Why do you like him? Why do you think he's such a good fit for this football team?
Yeah, and I actually had him much higher in my top 100 update back in March. But then he got hurt, and it was like, okay, you're not really going to be able to work out at full speed. And so there's some data we're missing there. So I knocked him down a little bit. But I thought, and actually my mock draft after the first round, I did a second and third round mock draft. I had the Browns taking Alex Wright in the third round. I thought, a lot of what he does, a lot of what, the traits, the age, just the potential with Eric Wright, I think it fit with what this team could be looking for. 6'5", 270 pounds. You love the length. You love everything about the projectable body. And he's continuing to grow. I mean, he is a young player, basketball background. And then you look at the tape and you see this guy that can bend the edge. You see a guy that can win with power when he uses that length, the speed to power. But there's all these different ways that he can win. He's just figuring it out still, understanding how to unlock all of that ability. So he had 7 sacks this past year, led the team. But I think a lot of those 7 sacks were just based off of him, throwing the kitchen sink out there and seeing what happens. So I think as he continues to mature and, understand how to use all these gifts that he has, he's going to develop into a much better pass rusher. So this is an investment, where he's going to be a rotational player as a rookie, and then going into year two, we'll kind of see where he's at in his development. But I think this guy has he's a future starter in this league. I have no doubt about that.
A lot of it was made before the draft about David Bell's testing numbers and how those maybe were going to hurt his stock. He ends up falling to the third round, even though he's a first team All-American. What do you like about his game, and what do you think about the relationship of his combine testing numbers to how he actually plays?
Yeah, and I think that after the pro day, people really soured on him because he had that 4.71. But, I mean, we already kind of knocked him down a peg because of he doesn't have that elite explosiveness, that elite speed. So I don't know why we were knocking him down again, after the pro day. We already know he's not a burner. That's not his game. It's not how he wins. So I thought people were misguided in doing that. But, talking to a scout that was at the pro day, watching that, I mean, his 40 wasn't great, but he said it was a great day for him because of how he performed in the positional drills, catching the football, running routes. He said he blew everybody away there. That was at the Purdue pro day. And when it all comes down to it, that's what we're drafting these guys for. It's not who's going to win in a race. It's who's going to go make plays. And that's what David Bell is. He's a ball winner. And he from the moment he showed up at Purdue, he was a 1,000-yard receiver as a true freshman. The last 3 years, super productive. 6'1", 210. Again, not a guy that's just going to run past defensive backs in the NFL, but you love the toughness. You love the body control. Really, really savvy in terms of creating space for himself, working to open zones. And then the ball skills are near elite for a prospect. It's really hard to find drops on his tape. So really productive. And like I said, a ball winner. And when it comes down to it, when you're looking for a receiver, you want to bet on ball winners, especially when we talk about what it costs. He was my 95th overall player in the draft. And I think he went, 99th? So, I mean, right around the range where I thought he'd go.
Moving on to day three, as we talk with Dane Brugler here on the best podcast available. The Browns with three picks in the fourth round. They traded one of those picks. First pick in the fourth round came at pick 108. And a guy that you can hear coming. You know he's around. He's loud. He's proud. Perrion Winfrey from Oklahoma at the defensive tackle spot. Here's a guy that some mocks had him in the second round, essentially dropped 50, 60 spots. But I know Andrew Gribble mentioned it in the podcast a couple weeks ago, but the defensive tackle class dropped a lot.
Yeah. Travis Jones, started with the third round. The defensive tackles, it was just not a great year for defensive tackles. But still, it was a surprise that Winfrey fell to the fourth round. I think, the main reason is you have to worry about him a little bit as a run defender, needs to be more consistent. But I tell you what, this guy is intimidating. Almost 6'4", 290 pounds, 35 and a quarter inch arms. And he could be a violent player. I mean, he can win with quickness. He can win with power. He's a bull in a china shop. He really is with the way he plays. There's a lot of ability there. And now it's up to the coaches. We talk so much about the evaluation side of things. Now it's up to the development. And that's where the coaches come in. And this is where you have to rely on the coaches to get all that talent out of him. Because he is a very unique player with the package of traits. He just needs to be more consistent in all facets of playing the position. So as a rookie, I think the outlook that you're looking at is a guy that's going to come in and be that one gap penetrator, which this team needed on the defensive line. So he's going to be expected to go out there as a rookie and, make some things happen, make plays in the backfield, which, I think we know he has the capability of doing. It's just, he needs to be a little more consistent. But I just, go back to the Senior Bowl. This guy was unblockable. I mean, he was the MVP of the game. He was the MVP of the week. Nobody wanted to face Perrion Winfrey. And so the talent, the ability, it's there. Now it's up to the coaches to get it all out of them.
It's pretty hard to get a guaranteed day one starter in day three, but I think the Browns did that with Cade York with the fourth round pick. Did it surprise you that no other kickers were taken after him? Or is that just a reflection of maybe how he's viewed league-wide as by far the best kicker in this draft?
Yeah, both. Yeah. I was a little surprised we didn't see a kicker later on, but I think it was clear Cade York was the top kicker this year. That's why the Browns took him in the fourth, right? I mean, they didn't want to even risk him falling to the fifth or the sixth and try to, get him around later. They got him where they felt comfortable. They needed to get him because they knew Cade York was their guy. And so I have no problems with them going that direction in the fourth round. Cade York, I think, hits a lot of check marks with what you're looking for. Drafting a kicker, you want a guy that's repeatable. You look at the mechanics, you look at the way he works. It's very repeatable. It's the same thing every time. You want the guy with a confident mentality. And of course you want a guy with some leg power. And I think he hits all those boxes. So, after Evan McPherson last year, a lot of it was made about, rookie kicker. It'll be interesting now see what Cade York can do as a rookie. 2 years ago, that's when Cade York first came on my radar, when LSU and Florida matched up. And it was a Marco Wilson game, throw the spike game, throw the shoe. But it was Cade York who had the last laugh and had the game-winning field goal to win that game. He's a good player. And, I'm a little surprised he went as early as he did, but I certainly understand the Browns' thinking that we can't risk this guy falling anymore and us missing out on this kicker, because I think that tells us the gap between Cade York and everybody else in this class.
So the Browns trade one of their fourth round picks from Saturday. They get a fifth this year. They also get a fifth round next year. So some good value here. And in the fifth round, the Browns, who did not have a fifth round pick, they go running back in a running back heavy room, but still continuing to build that depth just in case. And it comes in the form of Jerome Ford, running back out of Cincinnati, who has some plays and can make some plays.
Yeah, I mean, you want to create competition in the room, and there's plenty of competition already, but you add a Jerome Ford to that mix. And, I think that makes things really interesting. You really like the athlete that he is, 210 pounds, outstanding straight line speed, really good footwork. He moves well laterally. He makes it really tough on defenders in space because he has that plant and go burst. And so that's something that really stands out with Jerome Ford. Now, you know, with the vision, the pacing, some of the patience, I think he needs to be more consistent there. But, you know, it's something that, you know, he's a creator. I mean, it's something that he has the athleticism to do it. He just needs to be a little more consistent with some of the ancillary things. So this is, I think the way I described him is, you know, he's going to add a punch to an NFL team's depth chart because of that athleticism. And I think that's exactly what he could do for this running back room. And so it's going to be interesting to see how things shake out in training camp with all the running backs on the roster right now.
Dana, I won't make you go individual on all the three last picks here, but I'll just ask, of the three guys, Michael Woods, Isaiah Thomas, Dawson Deaton, when you look at this, them, and you look at the Browns roster, which of the three has, in your opinion, the best chance of making the team and making an impact as a rookie potentially?
I think it's Isaiah Thomas, clearly for me, a team that, you know, we know they want to get better on the defensive line. We know they like to use, you know, rotate guys in and out. And a guy like Isaiah Thomas, he makes sense as that rotational defensive lineman, can play inside, can play outside. You know, he's going to be that base end, but you want to kick him inside on passing downs. He could do that. And I think he's going to give you some push because that's what you like about Thomas, is the heavy hands, the length, and his ability to create movement at the point of attack. And so consistently he did that at Oklahoma. We think about, you know, all the Oklahoma players on that defensive line, Perrion Winfrey, Nick Benito, Isaiah Thomas is the guy that led the Sooners in sacks last year. So he is a guy that can get to the backfield and he can create disruption, make things happen. He tested a lot better than I thought, you know, what we saw on tape. So I don't think he's a guy that's going to win with pure speed and bend the corner, not that type of rusher, but again, the heavy hands and the ability to put blockers in reverse, that's what he can do. And so depth inside, outside on that defensive line, he's going to give it to you right away as a rookie.
Dane, taking a look at this Browns draft class, who do you think makes the biggest impact on this roster here in 2022? Not necessarily down the road, but which one of these guys you think is set up to make the biggest impact?
I'll say David Bell, because I think he's ready made. You know, I think with, you know, like a guy like Emerson, I think we're going to see out there and make plenty of plays. But I think there's parts of his game where he's still developing. Same thing with Alex Wright. You know, we talked about him being more of an investment, you know, someone that's going to develop over time. And same thing with Winfrey. We're going to see him on the field, but development and being more consistent is important for him. David Bell, the only reason why he was a third rounder and not a first rounder is he's just missing that explosive speed. But he's a guy that understands the position. He understands how to get open. He understands how to work himself to open spots. And he's always available. I mean, he understands where he needs to be. And he can develop that quick chemistry with the quarterback. So this is a team that has invested a lot in the quarterback position. Even though, you know, Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt, that running back room that we talked about, the running game is going to be a huge part of this team. But what they can do in the passing game with a guy like David Bell, who's going to be an immediate contributor, I think he's going to be talking about just year one. I think David Bell should not be surprising if he ends up being the top rookie for the Browns this season.
Coming up next in this special edition of Cleveland Browns Daily, Sam Monson drops by a Pro Football Focus. His view on where our roster stands right now. You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
There's a lot of bad advice out there about gambling, from secret methods to picking lottery numbers to betting big when you're on a roll. The miss can lose you money and get you in a lot of trouble. So before you wager, find out what's real and what isn't at keepitfunohio.com. As we continue on this special edition of Cleveland Browns Daily, here's our conversation with one of our favorites, Pro Football Focus's Sam Monson.
Sam, we kind of feel like if you're familiar with the movie Hoosiers, when Norman Dale says, my team is on the court, it kind of feels like our team is on the field now with the signing of Jadeveon Clowney. And as you look at everything that Andrew Berry has done this offseason, what do you make of it?
Yeah, I think it's been a pretty good offseason for Cleveland generally. Obviously, everything hinges on the big move they made for Deshaun Watson and everything that entails. And really, that is the single biggest statement move that this franchise has made since, I guess, drafting Baker Mayfield number one overall. So right now, we don't really know what Deshaun Watson's status is going to be with the NFL getting somewhere towards wrapping up their investigation of the whole thing. But Deshaun Watson on the field, I think, is a massive upgrade for this Cleveland team. And this was a team that was almost in playoff contention last year, even with a Baker Mayfield playing through a badly injured shoulder all season long. So if they get that kind of upgrade on the field at the most important position in the game, then this is a roster that's well capable of contending.
And one of the reasons this roster is capable of contending, we know the great running backs, the great offensive line, Amari Cooper is now here, but a lot of talent on this defense and the bringing back of Jadeveon Clowney to pair with Myles Garrett, with what's going on the back end of this D. What do you make of getting Clowney back? How important was that in your mind, and how good can this defense be now going into this season?
Yeah, I think it's a pretty important move. You need some kind of foil opposite Myles Garrett or alongside him, or just some other threat on that defensive line so the teams cannot take him away by dedicating all their resources to Myles Garrett and Myles Garrett only. You know, we saw last season that Clowney's capable of having those games where he's left with a favorable matchup and he dominates and he plays extremely well. He's never been able to sustain it for, you know, the full season and never earn that giant contract extension that he's looking for. But from the Browns' perspective, they need a guy that can take advantage of those one-on-ones, and you probably couldn't trust a guy like Alex Wright, the rookie, to come in there and do that immediately, though I do like his kind of long-term potential of emerging into being that guy. So I think getting Clowney back makes that defensive line a different proposition for opposing offenses to have to deal with, and makes them formidable enough that they're going to be a factor in most games, with Myles Garrett obviously doing the bulk of the heavy lifting.
And Sam, also the, you know, getting Denzel Ward locked up long term, and Greg Newsome, what we saw from him. I know the organization thinks a lot of Greedy Williams going into his third season. Ronnie Harrison come back. Wasn't the season maybe everybody expected from him, but he's still back. So that back side of that defense, back end of that defense, and then JOK, who, boy, was everything we thought he could be. There's a potential here, isn't there, for this defense to be pretty special?
Yeah, definitely. I think they really attacked that secondary last offseason, and they're kind of reaping the rewards of that right now. They've got a lot of quality players there, and, you know, almost too many players for the number of snaps you're going to have. And that, I think, it's part of the reason why they were willing to trade away Troy Hill after acquiring him. But yeah, that's a really talented group in coverage, which is the most important aspect of, you know, modern defense. So that group could absolutely change the way teams attack this defense, and really put some of the focus back on that defensive line and put them in some really good situations by buying them some coverage sacks and some coverage pressure.
Sam, when you flip it around to the offense where Deshaun Watson, you go and you look at the offensive lines he played behind in Houston, he has never played behind a line as good as that of the Cleveland Browns, and that's even with Nick Harris stepping in for J.C. Treader, who has been a stud and I think one of the more underrated and underappreciated players in the NFL, certainly at his position. What can you expect that to do for a guy like Deshaun and for this offense to have that great offensive line in front of him?
Yeah, it should be huge. I mean, we've been preaching at PFF for a long time that you don't need an elite offensive line. You don't need the best offensive line in the NFL. You just need to get a serviceable group, a group of five average starters, and you're in a good place. But it never does you harm to have an elite offensive line. It makes everything else easier. Obviously, it makes running the ball easy, and that's why with the talent that the Cleveland has in the backfield, they should have a really powerful running game as well. But it also makes everybody else's life easier from a passing game standpoint. The quarterback's going to have more time. The receivers have more time to get open. Everything just has more time and is able to function better. So, yeah, this is a great situation in terms of protection for Deshaun Watson to step into. And we've seen him play at an extremely high level despite not necessarily having that in the past. So from his perspective in terms of his potential ceiling as a quarterback, we might not have seen the best Deshaun Watson yet. And the last time we saw him play, he was playing at that elite level where he was one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, even if his team wasn't winning games that year.
Right. And led league in yards, led league in completion percentage. Very, very talented quarterback. And we're talking about that line real quickly. And Sam, I got a beef with you.
Oh, yeah? What's that?
Tier 1 guards, Martin, Nelson, Betonio. What about Wyatt? The guy was the number one graded player in all of PFF on offense 2 years ago and was darn good again last year. What's he got to do to be tier one?
He was. He needs to get a little bit better and a little bit more consistent in pass protection, I think. His run blocking has been off the charts. And, you know, when Jack Conklin was there alongside him, those two were the most potent double team in the NFL, I think. You watch those guys combination block on defensive linemen and just drive those guys off the line of scrimmage. It was crazy to see. But Wyatt Teller's, he's given up a little bit more in pass protection than the elite guys and the tier one guys. So I think he's right on that cusp. And, you know, certainly there's an argument that he's in that first tier. But I think even just comparing him to Joel Bitonio, you know, the pass blocking grades are not in the same kind of area. And he's given up sort of 7 sacks over the past couple of years. And that's a significant difference.
Okay. All right. Of course, fair. I knew you were going to have
a
fair answer.
A reasoned response.
Solid.
Come on.
He's a great. He's an elite tier two guard. Then elite tier two.
I like that. Yeah. That's fine.
That's fine.
Sam, we were talking. We had Donovan Peoples Jones in studio with us here about an hour ago, and we were talking about where we are at receiver. And I think conventional wisdom, a lot of people think that maybe the Browns need to add one more. I tend to think maybe they do too. But if they don't, I think two things that are critical are going to be David Njoku and Donovan Peoples Jones. That will be the key.
Yes.
That if we don't go get somebody else, those two guys need to really develop. What have you seen in their young careers to maybe lead you to believe that they can or that they can't?
Well, they're both kind of special athletes and special potential. And Njoku in particular, like, this was a guy who has all the tools to be an elite tight end in today's NFL, particularly as the league gets ever more focused on receiving at that position and blocking is a smaller part of the job than it once was. Like, you look at Njoku play and you sort of wonder, like, why hasn't he been amongst the best tight ends in the NFL? There's no reason that when you watch him play that this guy can't be a Darren Waller or, you know, one of those guys that really is at the peak of that position. So I think sometimes tight ends coming into today's NFL, it's a tougher transition than it used to be. And I think we're seeing some of these guys take a few years to really get going. But I think we started to see flashes of that or more consistency from Njoku last year. So I'm kind of excited to see what he can do this season and maybe an upgrade at the quarterback position won't hurt either. We'll give him better opportunities. But I think they have huge talent, those two guys. And somebody like Amari Cooper coming in to be the number one and to take real attention away from other guys in that offense, I think can only help players like that emerge and become more consistent secondary and tertiary targets for the quarterback.
I think that's going to be very exciting. And what we're talking about is the Browns' ability to throw the football at an elite level is something that, you know, frankly, we were not able to do last season. And so what you look at Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt and even Dearness Johnson, what they were able to do, it becomes more impressive because they did so against such heavy boxes. I think that's one thing that we're not really talking about. I'm curious to get your take on how does the Browns' run game get impacted by the fact that they are going to be facing significantly lighter boxes and probably a higher percentage of nickel defense as a base than they did a year ago?
Yeah, I think it probably starts off in a similar place because the offense, the scheme is going to be the same. Generally speaking, the deployment will be similar, and it's going to take Deshaun Watson in the pass game kind of earning the respect of the defense to back off. And once they're punished enough by a few big plays, sort of some play-action bombs over the top, some explosive plays that are opened up by the run game and by the alignment and by the way that offense deploys, then you'll start to see defenses backing off and giving them more light boxes to run into, and that'll have this magnifying effect on what the run game is able to do. So I think it's a kind of cycle that's going to have to play its way out, but at the start of the season, it'll be that run game powering the success of the passing game. And then later on in the year, that's when I think that run game is going to start to reap the benefits of what it was sowing earlier in the season and taking advantage of the lighter boxes the teams are starting to transition to.
I don't know if Nick Chubb's going to even know what to do with himself in some of these situations. It's going to feel like a very foreign concept, but a great one, I think, for him and obviously for the Browns. Talk with the great Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus. All right, Sam, I want to ask you about a kicker really quickly because you look at the Browns division. Justin Tucker, maybe the best to ever do it. Evan McPherson comes in, kicks the team basically to game winners throughout the playoffs and played a massive role in the Super Bowl run of the Bengals, and the Browns have been struggling trying to find that guy. They believe Cade York is the guy, selected him in the 4th round this year. When you guys go through this and break it down and take a look at these teams, how important is it to have a kicker that is reliable, that is, we'll call it above average or very good, or what's even a great kicker, an elite kicker? What does that mean for a team over the course of a 17-game season, and what could Cade York potentially mean for the Browns in that framework?
Yeah, it can be massively important. The issue is that the kind of data says that the only guy you can really count on being elite year after year after year is Justin Tucker. And everybody else kind of has elite seasons, and then they decline. They go back down. They sort of regress to the norm. But Justin Tucker is the one guy that's been able to do it consistently every single season. So, you know, we saw last season the kind of impact that a guy like Evan McPherson can have. When he has a year like that, it's incredible. And he was a real big part of the Bengals winning some of those really important games down the stretch and into the playoffs. But that doesn't mean we're going to see that guy again next year. And he might go back to just being, you know, a regular kicker. The good news for Cleveland is, you know, Cade York was one of the highest graded kickers in the nation last season at PFF. I think he had the second highest field goal grade of any kicker in the country. So at least the data is there that says he is a very good kicker right now and can be that guy. But yeah, it's kind of bucking a trend to be a truly elite kicker year after year for anybody whose name isn't Justin Tucker.
Coming up next in the special edition of Cleveland Browns Daily, Matt Waldman stops by taking a look at our draft class. You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Rumpke Waste and Recycling is family-owned and operated. Whether you join them as a customer or as an employee, you'll become part of the family. Visit Rumpke.com to learn more. And now our conversation with Matt Waldman of the Rookie Scouting Portfolio from May 5th, taking a look back at our draft.
Matt, first of all, how are you doing? Did you enjoy the draft and just kind of the wackiness and Wild West feel of that round one? Trades flying over, skill position players being traded, especially receivers, being drafted all over the place. Was this a fun draft for you?
Oh, absolutely. I think this was more of a scouts and a diehard football fans draft than any, despite all the, you know, carnival stuff going on in Las Vegas. But just being able to see all the movement and then just seeing these quarterbacks fall. And to me, it actually fell perfectly for these quarterbacks, even though draft capital can be a big signifier of opportunity. These guys need an extended opportunity to develop. And then just with the receivers and the depth of the running back class, even a lot of the free agents that are available are interesting this year. This could be one of the more fascinating drafts in recent history, even though maybe on the surface to the casual fan, it was kind of a dog.
A lot of people were saying that going in, and I won't lie to you. You know, I did a ton of draft coverage this week. We do on Thursday night. We did an hour of TV, 4 hours of radio. Friday night, 5 hours of radio, and then Saturday, three more. And for the Browns, we didn't even pick in the first 6 hours that we were on the air for the radio covering the draft, which is unprecedented, obviously. But I had a heck of a time. I thought it was a fun, fascinating draft, and for one that people thought was going to be a snooze fest. I really agree with you. I think it was anything but, and just seeing the massive shift in the mindset of football teams about draft capital and about the value of proven commodities in the league, which I always thought they seemed to be undervalued relative to the unknowns of the draft. I thought it was a great time for all to enjoy.
Absolutely. I think those are terrific points that you made. And to me, especially with quarterback, because when you think of the great quarterbacks that have come out of drafts, whether you want to go from a gunslinger like Brett Favre to a precision guy like Joe Montana to, Tom Brady, all those guys got to sit a little bit or had intermittent playing time. A guy like Steve McNair, who was an MVP, had intermittent playing time. Drew Brees had intermittent playing time. I mean, they got benched. You know, sometimes it was, you know, the great Marty Schottenheimer talked about, or that Drew Brees talked about the great Marty Schottenheimer being the one who developed him and saying, listen, you know, he would bench me when I wasn't seeing things well and say, you're my guy. I still have confidence in you. We're going to put the veteran in, let you watch this. And if we get close, I'm going to give you a chance to win it, which is just the great way of how you develop a guy, and that you're not seeing that in this league a lot, but these guys might get that chance. A guy like Malik Willis, who gets, you know, third round, and while Ryan Tannehill saying I'm not his mentor, that's okay. The fact that he can sit there for a couple of years at, through Tannehill's contract, watch and do the work that he needs to do. He has a fighting chance now, whereas if you put him in right away, I think you would have seen a player flounder a great deal and might even get kind of burnt to a crisp in the frying pan. That is often the way owners want to insert rookies into the league.
Were you surprised the way that the quarterback draft in particular unfolded? Or was that what you expected, and in your evaluations you thought that this quarterback class merited?
Well, grade-wise, this is exactly how I hoped it would be, but I got, I'm one of those people that every year thinks that there's maybe one guy at best who deserves a late first-round pick. So,
And that's the thing about the draft, well, because it's the position, right? And if you have an opportunity, people like to take that swing. But I think you're right. He ends up, Malik Willis, in a great spot there. And Ryan Tannehill said, look, he's going to learn from watching me and be with him. That's my job, is to teach him the right way to do things. But I'm not just an out-and-out mentor. I think a lot was made about that comment. And I think most quarterbacks probably feel very similar to the way that Ryan Tannehill did. And I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with that. The Browns didn't need to draft a quarterback in this draft. They've got Deshaun Watson here now, Jacoby Brissett backing him up. But they did need to get a receiver. And we talked about a couple names on there going into the draft. Now, one that we didn't talk about for day three was David Bell, who I know, though, you are a fan of. I watched your film study on him, read some things, some comparisons to DeAndre Hopkins. But what did the Browns get in Bell in your estimation? And is he a guy that, you know, can make an immediate impact for this team?
I think he can. I think he can play in a bit of a role that's similar to Jarvis Landry, but maybe in a different way of executing it. He is not, obviously, he's not very fast. He's not very, you know, his explosion, his athletic profile isn't fantastic by any stretch. It's actually quite low for a starting receiver. But he's a terrific pass catcher, a good route runner, understands how to win in physical coverage. He's going to work open in zones. He's more than quick enough there, and he's a heck of a football player and blocker. And when you use him on a run-oriented team or a team that runs the ball as well as the Browns do, you're going to be able to generate play-action opportunities. And he's such a good blocker, he's going to command respect of, you know, just like I talked about Alec Pierce last week. I like Bell almost as much, maybe a little more, in terms of the advanced conceptual traits of just like processing coverage, understanding how to set up defenders one-on-one. He just doesn't have the athletic upside of that, but he's a terrific football player. And that's kind of the theme with this Browns draft, is they picked smart football players who process information quickly, and if that's the theme that the Browns are going for, you got to get 100% behind that, because that really is the difference between good college athletes and good NFL players.
You're exactly right. Talking with Matt Waldman from the Rookie Scouting Portfolio with some very glowing words about David Bell, the Browns' third-round pick out of Purdue. Now, do you see him, you mentioned like Jarvis, in a different way, do you see him at this level inside, or does he have inside-outside versatility?
I think he's going to be best on the inside, but he might be able to give you a little bit of the Juju Smith-Schuster inside-out versatility, but it's going to be more selective in terms of where he's effective on the outside. But I do think he's more of an inside guy, but he's also more of a contested catch guy, where you can throw him open in the way that Deshaun Watson really counted on that with DeAndre Hopkins. And those are the routes that match up best for Watson anyway. We know that Watson doesn't have that high velocity arm. He throws the moonshots really well up the rails and across the field. But when it comes to those intermediate routes, he's best on those sail routes, the outs against zone coverage. But you don't want him throwing maybe the opposite field comeback or the opposite field out with, you know, great timing and velocity with a low trajectory. That's not his game. And that's really not where, with Bell's lack of speed and quickness, or acceleration, excuse me, that's not really his strength either. So you're going to see more of the routes you saw him throw with the Houston Texans. And that works just fine, especially when you're using maybe two receiver route combinations, twins to one side, or you line him up inside. You have, you know, Donovan Peoples-Jones on the outside, and you can mix and match with that. And when you put spell on the inside. He processes things so fast to be on the same page with his quarterback. He adjusts well to different things. I mean, there's a great play of his just as a run blocker where you see him, you know, handle two blocks and then pull away from one, knowing that it's not as important as what he's seen with, you know, cornerback backside penetration, and be able to spring his fullback for a long for a nice touchdown in the red zone, a long touchdown for a fullback. But, you know, that's
that would be, yes.
Yeah. So that's the kind of thing you get with him. And I think he can become a big time security blanket who, in terms of high receptions and, you know, somewhere between 800 to 1100 yards worth of production during his peak seasons, if schemed to him as a receiver.
You love to hear that, because I think in this offense, you're right, we're going to transition. We're still going to be obviously run-oriented. You've got Nick Chubb, you got Kareem Hunt, D'Ernest Johnson. But this is going to be a team that's going to do a little bit more 11 personnel than they did last year. We're going to be able to throw the ball a little bit more, and having that guy over the middle of the field that can be counted on to catch the football, because that's one of the things he does so well, I think is going to go a long way for both Bell and Deshaun Watson in this offense. Mentioning the running backs, the Browns obviously thinking about some succession planning here. And you talked about the depth in this running back class. I mean, they got a guy who just ran for 1,300 yards and 19 touchdowns, averaging 6.2 yards a carry and averaged 10 yards a catch last year at Cincinnati. Very productive, seems to have some real upside. Was originally recruited by Nick Saban at Alabama before transferring the last 2 years, about 280 carries and really 1,800 yards and 27 touchdowns on the ground. So incredible production. What are the Browns getting in this young man out of Cincinnati?
They're getting a guy who could be a future starter if they need him to be. That's how good this guy is. Joe Ford has excellent movement skills. And with the running back position, you need guys who don't just make the dramatic jump cuts and spins, which he can do that. But he's very efficient with his footwork. He can make the one small move, open his hips, and get outside. He can bounce plays, but he'll stay inside and run tough. He's not anywhere near Nick Chubb as a physical runner. But like D'Ernest Johnson, who is physical enough that when he gets his pads down, he can handle the pounding and keep coming back to get yards through contact and help his linemen by staying on his feet, and his linemen will help push him. He has that skill, but he's more mobile, maneuverable than Johnson. He is a good pass catcher out of the backfield. I think he has some good traits in terms of his vision. He understands his blocking schemes well. He understands where the cutback lanes are, processes that very fast. And running back is a high processing position. As Rick Spielman talked about recently before the draft, that when they're testing players nowadays in scouting, they're looking for processing speed. The closer to the middle of the field you are, the faster your processing has to be, which means that running backs and quarterbacks really have to have that high processing acumen. And he has that. There's a little bit of, if you're going to think of a player that he reminds me of, he's not as athletic as Jamaal Charles. He may not be quite as physical as Cadillac Williams, but he's kind of in that Cadillac Williams vein in terms of size, dimensions, and style to be able to function in tight spaces and make the most of plays by either making you miss, making the right decision, or being able to, you know, stay on his feet through contact.
I like that one. Cadillac Williams burst onto the scene. I think, didn't he set the record for the most yards rushing in his first game? Something crazy back in the day for the Bucs.
He was a stud.
He was a very, very good player. And then maybe run into the ground a little early in his career, a lot of carries, but Cadillac Williams certainly could play, and I like that comparison. It's just, again, it's nice to see the Browns be able to get value at that position, and I think that's a trend, don't you, that we're going to see more and more, where you can get good value at the running back position later on as kind of running backs aren't going as early as they once did. There are seemingly a lot of good ones coming out of college. Do you think that that's something we're going to continue to see, where you can get guys in the middle rounds who can end up being really good players?
Without a doubt, more than almost any position, you can name guys like Priest Holmes, Willie Parker, Terrell Davis, Arian Foster. I just named three out of four players were undrafted free agents in this league. It's kind of like the running back room now. It's like I always compare it to like a casting call in Hollywood, where if you know you could be, you know, Al Pacino, but you're still going to see, you know, Robert De Niro. You're still going to see like a room full of great actors in the same casting call. And that's kind of the draft right now. It's not that the running back position is getting worse. It's just that they're using them more in committees. They're using them more in piecemeal parts because they don't want to wear these guys down. And the position does have a high turnover rate. So when these guys are in a draft class, it's just like every year there's going to still be strong athletes that come out. Occasionally you'll have an absolute game changer of a player who will get drafted in the early rounds. But now teams know that really they can get a player with multiple different types of or multiple types of variables that they can plug in. Either, you know, you look at, you know, James Cook right now, who he might have the absolute best fit of the running backs who you might have considered as more of a mid-round guy, except for the fact that going to Buffalo and they're going to spread the field and use him as a multi-purpose weapon. Now you give him that Austin Eckler, Alvin Kamara, and I don't mean in ability, but like Marshall Faulk, in terms of if you spread it out, let him run real routes breaking from the outside in, which is what most running backs don't do, and he can do that, and he's tough at that. Suddenly now you have a player whose running skills in the between the tackles is good enough to be functional as a starter in that offense, because he may not pound him, you know, 15, 20 times like Nick Chubb and wear out a defense, but he's smart enough and skilled enough to maneuver in there and take enough of a pounding that you can give him 7 to 8 touches inside the tackle box and another 7 to 8, you know, around the offense in different spots, and suddenly he can be very productive in that fashion. So yeah, it's still one of my favorite positions, but how can it not be? You grow up in Cleveland and you grow up hearing about James, you know, about Jim Brown as if like he's the Zeus of the NFL. So that's base. I arrived on this planet about 5 years after he left. But that's all my family ever talked about. And that's what I grew up learning, is that Jim Brown was the Zeus of football. So
there's so much more to come in this special edition of Cleveland Browns Daily right here on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
And that'll about do it for us. A reminder, no show on Monday due to Nathan's birthday. Happy birthday, Big Z. Happy birthday, America, to everybody else as well. Have a safe and happy 4th of July. We will see you next week. The Next Level is coming up next. Thanks for listening, everybody. Cleveland Browns Daily, 850 ESPN Cleveland.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.